You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
You know, when I was preparing for us to review One Cut of the Dead, I just kept sitting there going, which one of us is going to get to our reviews and just start saying 5 out of 10 or 9 out of 10 palms? And then I realized this could be a fight, and I'm really just looking forward to that part and less about actually giving a score now.
I was definitely going to do that.
See? It is taking the world by storm. In fact, the Fantastic Fest, I think somebody made actual buttons that they sold just for cost to Fantastic Fest people. Because, like, yep, palm is the thing. This is the most important thing this year.
Yeah, I got a palm button. All the cool kids did.
Yeah, I was broke and unemployed then, so I need to just steal one from patients or something. It's going to be great.
I'm technically broke and unemployed right now, so, hey, sign me up.
It's what the critics do.
I'm doing just fine, so I guess the pity party ends here, I guess. Max, you employed? You devastated financially, or what?
I'm employed, but I'm still broke, though.
Man.
And that's the American dream.
It is rough. Four white guys, and only one of us enjoys white privilege.
Yeah, right?
I mean, I'm working for a school, so I guess that's technically being employed. It's just not really work. Hmm.
God, well, before we get too far off subject, we are reviewing One Cut of the Dead.
Oh, right, movie.
The Japanese, I guess we'll call it a horror movie that took the world by storm, or at least Japan by storm in 2017, where this tiny movie that was made on a 3 million yen budget, or 25,000 American dollars, basically became the highest grossing movie, I think, in the Japanese box office history.
Oh, my God.
Japanese, like, I would almost argue, like, world history. Like, it's not the most successful indie film ever, but the fact that it made 1,000 times its budget on an American, like, you know, if you scale it kind of thing, that's unbelievable.
It made 3.12 billion yen in the Japanese box office alone.
Yeah, so 30 million.
Oh my god,
worldwide.
That's like 30 bucks American money. That is a lot. No way, I think
it's almost enough to buy a Matt Frank action figure.
Dude, I can't wait to see how much it makes. It's coming out to the Alamo pretty soon, and like, I want to say like a week or two. Can't wait to see how much it actually makes here.
Yeah, and then it's
so
also
much hype for that.
It's being distributed through Shudder, I believe, too. So do you know the exact date when it's being released on Shudder, or? I believe this Friday, right?
I think it might be. It's been all around the world otherwise. It's been on, like, Delta Airlines, had it on their video streaming on the back of your chairs for, like, a year now, which I may have flown Delta just to watch it again at some point and then told patients, and then she's like, oh, the one time I'm flying, I'm going to watch it again. But
all you have to do is fly Delta. So take your life into your own hands, because it could easily become one flight of the dead.
Hey, I'm just saying, it's Delta or United, and I know which one I'm picking between those two, so...
I took every dollar I saved flying Delta to pay for the alcohol to justify flying Delta. It was great. Before we get too far into it, I am Ben, and joining me is Justin.
Hey, everybody. I'm sharing hosting duties with Ben here, because I'm a friend, and I'm nice.
You're a giver. as well as Justin, we have Nick.
It's me. I think, Ben, you're doing a better job than Justin has ever done. I think you should be fully in charge, and I say we vote Justin off the podcast right now. But I'm
all right,
instigator.
That was the last episode of Screener Squad. Okay, see everybody.
God, I don't have that kind of patience to do with you assholes this often. God, no. And last but not least, we do have Max joining us as well.
What's going on, guys? I think I'm too new to have a say in anything right now.
Oh, thank God. I was worried I actually met you before, and I didn't remember who you were.
No, nope. This is my third review so far.
I'm just glad you survived your trial by fire by reviewing with Alan for one of your early reviews, because who knows how that would go.
Yeah, we ended up reviewing Dora somehow. It was just me and him were the only people that saw it besides Ben, and Ben didn't have a chance to do it.
There was a spite review for Alan at some point where Alan still holds that against me, but...
Tell me, how did Bran Stark ruin Dora for Alan?
He found a way.
Okay. Nailed it.
But still, I think this time I gave Max a winner, because I told Max, I'm like, you need to see One Cut of the Dead, and Nick, me and you saw it at Fantastic Fest, which is basically where America said, oh, fuck yes, this movie.
Yeah, I watched it once in the theater, at the first midnight showing, and then I watched it on the streaming channel for reviews with Patience, I think, the other day. And then when I got home, I watched the same, since it was still up, I watched it with my roommate. And then I love this movie so much, I definitely didn't make an illegal copy of it at that point either, for sure. Oh, 100%, because I only watched it now because I got the link from you guys, for sure. I definitely downloaded it.
No, and that's the thing where I feel like I was late to the party, because I literally just got the link, like, you know, however, last week when we requested it, and I just literally finished watching it for the first time, I think, like, an hour ago. So I am fresh and ready to talk about this with very new, very wide-eyed impressions on this.
Yeah, and I just saw it for the first time, like, 2 days ago.
Well, fair enough. Well, before we get too far into it, there will be a spoiler cutoff, because without saying more than we can, the first 36 minutes of this movie are what you kind of expect from the picture in the on the poster and from the trailer. I highly advise against watching the trailer. Maybe
don't watch the trailer. Don't watch it.
Hey, everyone listening, you know how you got Cabin in the Woods ruined for you by that one friend you hate? Don't let that happen again.
Yeah, this movie's great on rewatches, but that first viewing, having no idea about what's coming out after that first 36 minutes, is completely worth it. So basically, the first 36 minutes starts you off with, basically, you're seeing a film shoot of a budget zombie movie in an abandoned filtration plant, and it turns out, hey, there's actually zombies here. And throughout that period, they three main cast try to survive, a crazy director and zombies and all kinds of other wacky shenanigans of the zombie nature that go on there. And after that point, well, we'll get to our spoiler talk later if you really want to hear it and ruin it for yourself. But you're terrible and you should hate yourself for that.
Well, yeah. We could say a few things objectively without spoiling too much about this. Like, one thing that is clear in the first 36 or 35 minutes is one single take. You know, hence the title, The One Cut of the Dead. And, you know, for being such a low-budget film of only $25,000, that single take is pretty darn impressive, you know, all the way through.
Oh, for sure. The amount of production work that it takes for that, you have to block everything out, including your camera people, for that. And for the most part, it is a very clean single take. I mean, you know, all things considered. And it's a cohesive enough movie too, which is another challenge in one cut and one take.
Yeah, no, but gosh, I mean, I know there are things I can objectively say. I'm tiptoeing around some spoiler stuff, but I think, I mean, on the whole, it's a very well produced indie movie. It's got a great cast. It can be surprisingly funny at points. Like, even as the story evolves and that such, you see just stuff that you go, oh, that was a big payoff to this thing here and this here and this stuff. And there's just some really great laughs throughout the entire film.
I would say if you've ever been involved in film production on any level, you've got to see this movie.
Oh, yeah.
It would definitely be right
just
up
on a technical level. Just on a technical level.
Yeah,
technical. But, yeah.
And the acting was so weird, too. But it was like a good weird. It was just everything was strange that was going on. There were just like there were such long pauses in between some different dialogue scenes. It was just like this is crazy.
I really do love the main character. One of our main characters, Takuyaki Hamatsu, who plays the director. Like he is an actor. He's so expressive in this. And in this movie, almost everyone in this movie has basically got no other credits on IMDb or Wikipedia or anything. They may have changed since then, but. It's amazing, just, like, all these people just feel so naturalized in these characters, and it's kind of like, where have these people been in Japanese cinema that, like, I'm sure they're going to get a lot of work after this with how successful this movie was. I think it started, like, one theater, and then basically after the first month, it was in every theater in Japan. Like, these people must be a perfect mainstay in their cinema now.
You know, I don't know for sure, because I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, and most of the cast still don't have any pages for them, or any IMDb credits. So, like, the only one who does is Yuzuki. I'm sorry, my Japanese is terrible. Yuzuki Akiyama, which, you know, she does seem to have some kind of, like, idol experience, because, you know, it's a Japanese film. Almost guaranteed someone is a pop star among the cast, kind of thing.
Well, but, and Mao, who plays the daughter, has also been a voice actress in Xenoblade Chronicles and evidently also a show called Cops and Robbers since this. So basically, her career has kind of grown since then.
Yeah. No, I think all the cast are really solid throughout this whole thing. Like, it's one of the things you can't really pinpoint who's the best actor, because they're all giving it, you know, giving it their all on an equal level, I feel. And even some of the bit players, like, again, we don't know all their names, we don't know who they are, but some of these bit performances that go on here are great. Like, they just have, like, one or two great moments to shine throughout the entire film.
Well, fair enough. We're about 10 minutes in, and if we want to get to spoilers, I think we should cut it off here. So, Justin, do you want to roll into final thoughts?
Yeah, so I think that's probably exactly the right place to do it. It's funny, I didn't know anything going in. Even when Nick already saw it last year and we did our end of the year list, he's like, oh yeah, no, I would talk more about this, but the movie hasn't come out yet and this kind of stuff. So I had some hype, but I wasn't sure what to expect. And I'm so glad I went in cold, because that made the movie that much better. It's just so many great surprises one after the other. Even some points where I wasn't sure where the movie was going. And I think that's the only complaint I can level against this movie. And again, this is subjective to just me, but there was a part in the middle section, again, I can't say too much about it, it did sag a little bit at points because it was trying to set a bunch of pieces together, but then the last third happens and it totally pays off in every little detail it sets up in that second act. So, honestly, yeah, there's some promos going around. This is one of the best horror comedies to come out since Shaun of the Dead. I don't know if that's a great comparison back and forth, but it almost got a feeling of, like, Shaun of the Dead mixed with What We Do in the Shadows in terms of, like, filmmaking style and that such. Mm-hmm. And I think it's all the better for it, honestly. So I'm going to give this, I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 people who really need to use the porta potty.
All right. Well, Nick, you want to take it up from here?
Yeah, sure. So I've been thinking about this movie a lot ever since it actually came out. The thing about it is that no other movie actually has attempted to do what this movie does in its structure and what it's trying to achieve, which is very, very interesting. I would say that as far as horror comedies, I would put it up with Shaun of the Dead, Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, Final Girls, Cabin in the Woods. I think it belongs there. It is that good. And also the beginning of the movie, like we said, the first 37 minutes, you won't understand at first, but that 37 minutes is actually daring filmmaking. It's actually it was actually a very risky move, and it actually really pays off later. It's like watching watching the dismount, and you're like, there's no way they're going to land this, and then the just lands it perfectly. I loved it. And then Palms after it. But yeah, this is really, if it will actually make you, if you have watched a lot of film, if you even feel slightly jaded towards horror movies at all, it helped me fall in love with filmmaking movies and horror movies specifically again. So I'm going to give it 10 out of 10 actions.
I love how it's always a surprise every time it happens.
Action!
All right, ready? Action!
Action! All right, Max, how about you?
Honestly, yeah, I thought it was a very innovative movie. It really reminded me a lot of the 2017 movie that Woody Harrelson did that was Lust in London.
That one that was all like one live shoot.
Yeah, it was also like a one take. It was a live movie. It was like an hour and a half. And I would love to see this movie and Lost in London like taught in like a single class at a college. Just like it's one cut day. We're gonna watch both of them back to back. I thought the middle was kind of didn't really fit very well, but I also think it was kind of important to get to the payoff.
Yeah.
So I would give it an 8.5 bottles of hard water out of 10.
Oh God. Yeah. Nick kind of nailed it for me. Like, this movie, it killed so much at Fantastic Fest. Like, I was going without a badge that year. So, like, I was, like, you know, running to get in the front seat. Like, they come out, it's like, oh, you got to give it, you know, the 36 minutes, which I'm like, honestly, if you're at Fantastic Fest and you're already at the Midnighters, you're already drunk enough, you're going to give every movie at least, like, 20 minutes. You're perfectly fine. But, like, you know, even the crowd was kind of getting into the campiness of it, having a good time. And then when it just changes, and when it moves past the 36 minutes that we don't want to spoil, just like everybody was so engrossed in it. And I can tell you guys, you know, I think if you watch in a theater when it's coming out of the theaters now, you might even raise your scores up, because just even it's a great movie for watching with a crowd, because just the energy is even better with that. I love every segment, even that middle part that you guys think dragged a little bit. I think it dragged in ways that it was kind of supposed to for being a real major change of pace from this first act. And I think it just works. You know, even when I was on that flight on Delta, I was like, you know, do I want to watch it again? Do I want to preserve it in my memory? And like the second I put it on, I was like, I don't want to look away from this. I need to. There's so much you want to analyze, especially on the second viewing. Like, I honestly think you both might, as long as they still have our press screener still active, we'll probably want to go revisit it and just like analyze segments for what happens afterwards, because there's so much that feeds back into it. So since none of you took the score and I get to take it now, I'm going to give it 9.5 palms out of 10.
So many palms. Palm.
It's right, very important for, you know, the action. It's all about the palm.
Oh, yeah.
Every day I'm palming.
Is what I hear.
All right, so let's do the spoiler section here.
Yeah, okay, so guys, if you don't want to hear spoilers, which we highly recommend, turn it off now. You hear us now? Who wants to say the first thing about the rest of the movie?
So, what you said about the audience experience, Ben, is that I've never watched a movie intentionally lose an audience its first 30 minutes during its first act, and then get them back on purpose by the time of the third act. You're cheering for the first part you didn't like. You're raising your fist. And how that works is that after the first 37 minutes, it just plays out like the, you know, pretty subpar zombie one-cut movie that it is. And then it fades to white, and all of a sudden we fade back to, what's it like, like a month, 2 months later, or 2 months previously?
Yeah.
One month.
Okay, yeah.
And we go to this director, the director from the first story, but he's in the midst of creating that movie, the movie within the movie, which is, the idea is, this executives want a horror movie with one cut, like one, you know, one singular shot, never broken up. Also, they want to stream it live. And he laughs.
Yeah, because this is for... it's for Japanese television.
Yeah,
so.
And he laughs in their faces because he's like, that is impossible. No one can do that. And, like, even for someone on his level, he even knows his catchphrase is, you know, I may not be fast, I may not be good, but I'm cheap. And
No, this is worse than that. It'll be fast, it'll be cheap, it'll be average.
It'll be like, fast, I'm cheap, but I'm average. Yeah, it's like, that's his selling point. So but his daughter is really into one of the actors that is going to be on this project, and he's having trouble connecting with her. So he takes the project that he is in no way qualified to take. I don't think anyone's qualified to try and do this project, but he is definitely not. So he gets in over his head almost immediately. And then you start to see the dominoes kind of start to be set up before they get to fall, because there's actors that are like, wait a minute, that's not the same actor from the first one. Like, what's going to happen to those people? And, you know, there's like the second act is like setting up the dominoes for the first act, but they did it afterwards. And then by the time the third act runs around, it goes back through the first act and hits everything. You were like, that was fucking weird. What was that? And explains that all in this way of a film production gone tits up, and everyone is just trying to finish it. They're not trying to make it good. They're just trying to finish it. And
it doesn't line up perfectly, but it lines up enough that the filmmaking of both segments is so just, it really just really draws you in. You're like, this is amazing that somebody mapped this out and put this together. And I do want to say, like, the second that I knew I loved this movie, and even, like, every time I've rewatched it, is that part where when he's getting the pitch for this, and they're like, no, we're being serious, will you do it? And then just the guitar riff comes in the late opening title, the late opening credits comes in for the actual movie. I'm just like, this is great. Like, they're so self-aware about how weird and crazy this is with that guitar riff and that opening credits sequence that's in the middle of the goddamn movie. And every time that guitar comes in, you're just like, this is just fun. I'm having the best time watching this movie.
And you know what's great about those execs?
Yeah, that was so cool.
Is that when the final thing is happening, they're barely paying attention. It's so hilarious. Like, they're doing everything they can to just finish this thing, and then but the execs are like, this is fine or whatever, I'm gonna play on my phone. Like, they just don't give a shit.
It's funny because when that scene happened that they're on, where everyone's looking at their phones, I was looking at my phone too. So I'm like, oh, it works. They totally got the right attitude. They were going for that. But what's really funny too is that this reminded me a lot. If you guys follow YouTube for David S. Sandberg's YouTube page that he did a video essay recently about how to make, like, how film essentially is the art of problem solving in terms of filmmaking when he talked about Shazam. And this felt so much like watching that happening right in front of our eyes.
In real time.
Like, yeah. Yeah, so it's like, oh, we had this thing happened, so we had to adjust for this. Oh, this thing happened, so we couldn't do this scene, but we decided to reshuffle it into this scene. And then this thing happened, and we rolled it with it.
Yeah, to explain the Pomeran, for instance, we keep referencing, it was a stretch thing because they weren't set up for the next shot. And one of their actors was sick, and so the director's wife...
Oh, no, he was drunk. That's what
it was. Or drunk, yeah. So the director's wife, who had to step in for the previous actress because the other two actors...
Yeah, they didn't make it because they were the director
having
of
an affair.
The character, yeah, were having an affair, and then they got into a car accident because they were together. And they're 2 hours away from anywhere else.
And the wife is teaching them self defense because they just need to fill time. During the first part you're watching, you're like, what the fuck is happening? And it's hilarious the second time because you realize, oh, they're just filling it with whatever. They just need to just keep going so that. That the shot isn't broken. And I love the wife character is probably my favorite too, because the director, he doesn't want his wife to participate because he doesn't want her acting anymore. And I thought that was like, whoa, that's pretty controlling, dude. But No, he actually does not want her to act because she gets way too into her roles to the point where she is actually physically assaulting other actors at certain points in this movie, and he has to sleeper hold her, choke her out. And at that point I was like, yeah, you gotta get rid of her. There's
oh no, because that sequence is so good because four people try to stop her, they all get popped, and it's so good.
Yeah, pop.
And there's a point where it almost seems like she's about to kill one of the actors without even knowing it. So you get this kind of like suspense thing. It was like, did these people actually die for real?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Like, that's what I loved about the first third so much, is that on the surface, it's just a generic zombie movie, but they do all those little things where they're addressing the camera at one point, people miss their cues, little things happen. It almost felt like a lot, that string of like, you know, found footage movies that happened in kind of the mid 2010s kind of thing, where it's like, you don't know if the cameraman's actually a character in the story, if he's actually part of in on it, or if it's an invisible camera. And I just love the fact that they pulled the curtain on that so effectively when you find out what's actually happening behind the scenes. So it's like, oh, I appreciate this on a kind of a meta goofy level. Now I appreciate it more because of what it actually meant.
Well, even the camera style changes at a certain point because one of the cameramen gets knocked out. And... So it's led to his assistant finish the film, and it all culminates in the best part is the climax where the rig breaks.
Oh, the crane.
The crane, yeah. They're going to do a final crane shot and have it like go up to see the actress with the like a demon symbol, like, you know, blood anarchist symbol beneath her. And the crane breaks, so they just pyramid-style people, like, just start stacking people on top of each other and drag the camera up to the top of this pyramid of people to stay on the shot long enough for the credits to roll. And they are just holding together, just trying to finish. And when it's done, they all, like, just completely fall exhausted, but they're all laughing and hysterically happy because they finished.
What's so good about that, though, is... There's in one of the scenes that I think is why I think the middle segment is so important and so good is they're so disparate people at the beginning, except for, like, you know, the family. Well, the father and the daughter are pretty disparate, but basically because, like, they're most of them are pretentious actor types or the producer who, like, is just disconnected enough. Like, I love when they're doing the script read, because it's such a perfectly crafted scene of the chaos of filmmaking and just realizing, what the fuck did I sign up for? Is the director sitting there, the baby's crying, and, you know, both of his stars are like, well, I don't know about doing this, and no, zombies wouldn't do that.
I don't know if a zombie would use an axe. I don't know.
and, I can't drink hard water, and you need to map out where every toilet is. This is very important. And the other guy, I love the guy who's clearly completely drunk trying to stay awake, and that moment when he just passes out and slams his head. I'm just like, this scene is so perfectly crafted. And then when you get to that final scene where they all fall down and they're all finally like, I'm so happy I did this. This production was great.
They're all in it together.
Utter Chaos is so, it's such a beautiful end to a movie that literally is about the chaos of filmmaking, and it's wonderful.
I really wanted to cheer at that point. That would have been great to see with an actual audience.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did cheer. The audience turned around. That was what was super special about it, was just like, holy shit, this movie lost us in the first 30 minutes on purpose and then got us back to the high point. I've never seen a movie do that before.
Yeah.
No, this movie really, like, if anything this movie does perfectly, it sells you how fun, like, how hard, but how fun filmmaking can be. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a pain in the butt. It's so many things can go wrong. You have to consider so many variables. But at the end of it, even if it's not as perfect as you want it to be, you still have so many great memories from it. You enjoy the experience. And that was just, you know, having been on independent film sets as well myself, that was just so exhilarating. Because I've been on both ones that were either really, really fun experiences or total disasters. But I still remember them fondly, even the disaster ones.
It gives you a perspective for even the worst thing you've ever seen had a production crew that worked so hard on it. And
oh yeah,
it was their lifeblood for like months, and that was their life. And it made this thing. It may be shitty, but it's theirs. You know, did Velocipaster have a great, you know, a costumers? No, but they sure worked hard, you know?
That's what makes it so different with, like you're saying, Velocipaster, is like, even those movies that are terrible like that, at least you can see people trying to have fun doing it. You know, that's what, and this movie also has the same feeling where it's like on top of the meta stuff, it just looked like it. The actual making of this movie itself was a blast for everybody who was involved with it.
I was going to say, because in the end credits, they actually do have the actual footage of them actually filming the first 36 minutes.
It's
because
so many layers.
Because the second and third segments of this movie aren't the actual filming as much as you'd think it would be. Mm-hmm. They actually filmed it separately and then recreated every scene as it would be of a more crazy version of that, but believable. And
yeah,
it's so just exhilarating to stay for the credits. Like, people, again, this was like, it was only an hour and a half movie, but as a midnight movie, that's almost 2 a.m. middle of a film festival, and people were just riveted, just sitting there going, that's amazing, like cheering still through those end credits, dead tired during a film festival. And it's just like, yeah, you love it. It kills. It's an amazing production just to put that much work into creating that and designing that.
Hear that, yeah, everybody? Your reward for watching this movie is at the end, you get to watch people film other people film other people make a movie.
Oh man, like there's just, and that's the thing, like, I don't want to just say every single thing that happens in this movie, but there's just so many parts. Like, once I knew what the joke was on us as the audience, there was just so many funny moments. And probably my favorite one, I won't say exactly what, but there's a moment where the actress is hiding behind some barrels, and you see the leg of some zombie approacher, mm-hmm, like, presumably, oh, yeah, searching for her. But when you find out what the actual context for that scene was, that part made me laugh the hardest almost anything.
Oh, that was hilarious.
I also really, really enjoyed the alcoholic actor guy. He was just actually like spitting up throw up on people. It's like, are you kidding me? The guy missing the arm, he's just like, please give me a towel, please, please. There's no towel.
I will say, this movie has a poop joke that should be so just ludicrously cheap, but for some reason it's still hilarious, because the character who's in the poop joke is just so just in the moment, and you just like, oh god, I feel so bad for that.
Well, and that dude had acted like such a total weirdo up to that point that I'm like, you know, I almost feel glad this happened to him. You know, I'm just like, okay.
Well, then they have to like move him out of the shot because they're shooting all around this location, and everyone has to, at certain points, people or grips are just jumping out of the way to not be in the shot. They're rolling, ducking, and covering, like, oh, shit, here comes the camera. And they're just so hard trying to not break the illusion.
And I love the director with the, talking about the drunk guy, what he has to do to get the drunk guy in scenes. It's so, like,
that was insane.
Just thinking about it are some of the best just physical acting I've seen in a movie in a while. Just, it's so perfectly visual of a gag. I love this movie so much.
Oh, yeah. It's great. I didn't know what to expect. I'm so happy I watched this. I'm so happy I asked for this.
Yeah, same here. I just wanted to, touch on the Woody Harrelson movie just a little bit. I don't know, have you guys seen it?
No, I saw a commercial.
I haven't,
though.
I just thought the only reason I gave this movie an 8.5 out of 10 instead of higher was because I feel like the Woody Harrelson movie did a tiny bit better. But it
well,
was,
I mean, this one isn't actually—it's not actually a live movie.
No, so I know, I know. Yeah. That's that's the difference. But the Woody Harrelson movie—it had the same tone, and it was like an hour and a half. And then at the end, they have like a live Q&A because they live streamed it to the theaters as you were watching it. So they had a live Q&A at the end of the movie, and he went over like the weird like mess ups and everything, and like, oh, this guy didn't show up in this scene when the phone was ringing, and they had to like delay the phone call for 5 minutes. So it was just the longest scene ever. You could tell that they're having as much fun in both movies making them, and
nice.
It was a really fun watch. You guys should check that out at some point.
Okay, I knew that had a kind of a mixed reaction, but I've always been curious to check that one out.
It wasn't a great movie, but like it was the same tone. It was just fun to watch, and it was like a good filmmaking experience type of thing.
Well, nice. Max had to read in subtitles, and he hates reading his movies, so he had to knock a couple points off it.
That's not true. I used to watch anime all the time, so I'm used to this stuff.